let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Fear has a profound negative impact on engagement, learning efficacy, productivity, and innovation. But until now, there has been a lack of practical information on how to make employees feel safe about speaking up and contributing. In his new book, The Four Stages of Psychological Safety, Defining the Path to Inclusion and Innovation, Dr. Timothy Clark, a social scientist and an organizational consultant, provides a framework to move people through successive stages of psychological safety. It's the first practical hands-on guide that shows how leaders can build psychological safety in their organizations, creating an environment where employees feel included, fully engaged, and encouraged to contribute their best efforts and ideas. Dr. Clark is the founder and CEO of Leader Factor, a leadership consulting and training organization that works with executive teams around the world. An Oxford-trained social scientist and sought-after international authority on organizational change. The author of five books, including The Four Stages of Psychological Safety, Dr. Timothy Clark, our guest on This Week in America. Dr. Clark, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us today.
Thanks, Rick. It's good to be with you.
This is such an important book. It's a side of employee safety we really don't hear that much about. We hear, of course, about physical safety, but rarely psychological safety. To start off, give us a definition, if you would, please. What exactly is psychological safety?
Sure. So psychological safety means, here's a way to put it. It means that it's not expensive to be yourself.
Interesting.
So think about that. That means that at the workplace or in any other social setting, you don't feel a fear that you're going to be embarrassed or marginalized or punished in some way. And so if you feel that way, then you're much more likely to engage. So that would be the basic definition.
Talk a little bit about the connection, the correlation between that level of psychological safety in an organization, in the workplace, and the impact on people's behavior. I'm assuming once you feel that way, that you are encouraged to be yourself, that you're much more productive for yourself and for the organization.
No, that's exactly right, Rick, because here's what happens. If you have a boss or a teammate or a colleague, the way that they interact with you and the way the team interacts with you, it does have a direct and profound impact on your behavior. If someone pushes the fear button, then what that does is it triggers what we call the self-censoring instinct. And we all have one.
Yes.
And if someone pushes that button and triggers that self-censoring instinct, then what do? Well, we retreat, we curl up, and we manage personal risk, which is a completely normal thing to do. So you can see that the environment, that level of psychological safety in the environment, it does have a direct impact on behavior. And then behavior gives us our productivity, whether high or low.
Our guest on the program is Dr. Timothy Clark. He is the author of The Four Stages of Psychological Safety, Defining the Path of Inclusion and Innovation. The book's available at all the usual places. His website is leaderfactor.com. If you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you can link on directly to Dr. Clark's website. Let's talk about the four stages, the four levels of psychological safety. What are they?
So stage one is what we call inclusion safety. And inclusion safety means that you feel included. You feel that you belong. You feel that you're part of the team. And that satisfies the basic human need that we all have to fit in. So we have a biological need to fit in. We long to belong. So that's really your foundation. That's stage one. And a lot of organizations, they struggle even with stage one to create an inclusive environment, an inclusive culture. So that's really the first order of business. After stage one, we move to stage two, which is learner safety. Learner safety means that you feel safe to engage in all aspects of the learning process. So asking questions, giving and receiving feedback, experimenting, even making mistakes. Again, without the fear that you'll be embarrassed or ridiculed or punished in some way. That's stage two. Stage three is contributor safety. Contributor safety means that you feel free and able to contribute, use your skills, talents, abilities to make a difference with some autonomy. So that's where you find meaning and purpose in your work, and you're able to use what you've learned, which is, it's a natural desire. Once you learn something, you want to use it. So then we go to stage four. Stage four is the last stage. It's the culminating stage. We call it challenger safety. Challenger safety means that you feel safe to be able to challenge the status quo. Now, if you think about that, that's the highest level of psychological safety for a good reason, because yes, when you challenge the status quo, you're at the highest point of personal vulnerability. And so you need psychological safety to protect you in that. So the social exchange at that level is candor. I'm going to trade my candor for air cover. So and that's what organizations want. So stage four is really the level at which we innovate, because innovation by its very nature is disruptive of the status quo. So that's just a brief summary of the natural progression of those four stages.
And you talk about in the book, the four stages of psychological safety, the importance for an organization to have your employees feel psychologically safe. Talk about that. And you talk about the number one enemy of innovation, which is homogenized thought. Talk about the importance of that, especially that challenger safety, because you really need to have honest input to be successful, don't you?
Well, you really do. If you're competing in a dynamic environment, things are changing all the time. And so you need, here's a way to frame it. You need intellectual friction, but at the same time, you need to reduce social friction. So this is really the leader's role. So simultaneously, I'm going to increase the intellectual friction. Why? Because what do we need? In order to solve problems, in order to come up with solutions, in order to innovate, we need creative abrasion. We need constructive dissent. We need ideas that are colliding with each other. And so that's the intellectual friction. But what happens is normally when you increase intellectual friction, you tend to increase social friction at the same time, because humans are sensitive, right? Yes. On the end of every idea is a human being, and we're a little sensitive. So the very skilled leader will try to keep that social friction down as the intellectual friction is going up. If you can do that, then you're going to be able to accelerate your organization's ability to innovate, and you're going to protect the team from the dangers of groupthink, right? And creating an echo chamber.
And you walk us through that. You take all of your years of experience, including, and you talk about it in the preface to the book, the introduction, where you're in you're working in a steel factory, and you sort of see this firsthand and realize the psychological safety and how important that is. And you talk about actually assigning people to shake things up. Talk about bringing in the red team. I love this concept, and it even goes back to NASA did this in the beginning with their Tiger teams. Talk about bringing in the red team.
It sure does. So a red team is, it's when you have a team and you say, okay, we're going to take half this team and we're going to assign you to dissent. So what that means is we want you to disagree. We want you to look at what we're trying to do, whether it's a decision, a proposed course of action, an initiative, a project, whatever it is that we're trying to do, we want you to tell us what's wrong with this, where the flaws are, where the weaknesses are, where we might be going wrong. And the reason that we want to assign dissent is because when we assign it, we replace, we give permission, we give institutional permission. And that institutional permission replaces people's personal fear. because we've given them permission and it comes from the institution. So they're much more likely, they feel the protection of that, and they will, you'll see that they will actively dissent. They'll give you their very best thinking, and you'll really be able to debate issues on their merits. If you don't give people that permission and formally assign them to dissent, then they're going to be really reluctant to weigh in, even when they disagree or they think there's a problem.
Yes. Our guest in the program is Dr. Timothy Clark. He's the founder and CEO of Leader Factory, a leadership consulting and training organization. Works with executives and teams worldwide. His website is leaderfactor.com. The book is The Four Stages of Psychological Safety. Available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual places. Link on by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. To get to that level, there are a lot of emotions and feelings on both sides, from management, from the employees. And you list a number of things we can do to facilitate the process. One is speak out about speaking up. And I guess that's where it all starts. So we know when someone says, I want your opinion, they're sincere about it. Talk about the importance of speaking out about speaking up.
Well, it's one thing to say that. And,
yes.
And I think a lot of leaders, they give lip service to that. But as a leader, I think that you have to demonstrate that, because here's what people are looking for. If they engage in an act of vulnerability, whether it's learning, whether it's contributing, whether it's challenging the status quo, what everybody's going to be on the lookout for is, how do you respond to that? How does the boss, how does the leader, how does the manager respond when someone commits an act of vulnerability? If that act is rewarded, then they're going to do it again. And other people will be encouraged to do that same thing. If that act of vulnerability is punished, they won't do it again because they realize that it's not safe. And so again, they're going to retreat. So it really comes back to the leader's modeling behavior to reward acts of vulnerability rather than to punish them. If that becomes the norm, that's not going to be lost on everybody. Everybody's going to get that. They're going to see it. And they're going to realize that they can engage. And that shifts the culture. That's how you transform an organizational culture and move it to a much higher level of sustained psychological safety.
In the book, The Four Stages of Psychological Safety, you talk about leaders must set the tone and how important that is. And you say it's pretty basic, you either show the way or you get in the way. Talk about that, because they can set up roadblocks, whether consciously or subconsciously.
Now, it's really true. I like to say it this way, a leader is never neutral. You can't be a leader and be neutral. There's no such thing. You're going to have impact. You're going to have an influence. The only question is what kind. And so when you show up, it's good to remind yourself that, you know what, I'm going to lead the way or I'm going to get in the way. I'm never going to be a neutral player. I think that creates a sense of humility in all of us who have leadership positions. And we realize that in everything that we say and do, we are modeling. We are setting the tone, and we have a profound impact. We have a far-reaching impact throughout the organization. So just by virtue of your role, you are setting a tone. You are either leading the way or getting in the way, and I think that's something for leaders to remember.
Talk about, once you ask for this honesty, once you ask for opinions, once you ask for more than opinions, more than maybe something a knowledgeable employee can shed on this, how do you brace yourself for the truth? Sometimes we don't like to hear the truth, especially if it casts negatively on our policies.
That's very true, but ultimately it's the truth that allows us to be competitive, to be successful.
Yes.
And continue to be successful. If we don't do that, and this, by the way, is absolutely fascinating. If we reject that, if we don't accommodate the candor and the truth telling, then ultimately we start to deceive ourselves and we develop what we call willful blindness. And so if you look at organizations that fail, almost inevitably, when you try to understand, when you try and do a root cause analysis of failure, why did they fail? In most cases, you'll see this pattern of willful blindness where they started rejecting the truth.
With us on the program, fascinating conversation, Dr. Timothy Clark, author of the book, The Four Stages of Psychological Safety, Defining the Path of Inclusion and Innovation. You mentioned failure, and one thing you talk about is embracing failure, and that failure is sort of, it's a negative. We all want to avoid it. We'll talk about how to embrace failure after these messages. You're listening to This Week in America.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4530. 802-341-4530. 802-341-4530. That's 802-341-4530.
Hi, my name is Lily. My mom and dad used to fight about money all the time. Then one day, I heard them talking about this guy. Some uncle I never knew called Uncle Sam. Well, they say this Uncle Sam guy wanted them to pay him like a gazillion dollars. And they didn't have a gazillion dollars. So they called this company they heard on the radio called The Tax Doctor. And The Tax Doctor worked with Uncle Sam's people. I think they're called the IRS. And they're able to work it out so my mom and dad didn't have to pay Uncle Sam very much money at all. So now mom and dad are happy, and I'm happy too. Thanks, Tax Doctor.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state, call now and pay less. 800-817-2871. 800-817-2871. That's 800-817-2871.